a Cup of Capital, a place where experts share their insights on various aspects of building and running a startup. Embarking on an entrepreneurial journey can be daunting, so why not equip yourself with as much information as you can? Numbers speak louder than words. Today, my guest is Florent Aurélien Couturier-Cruzier, an associate at DTCP in their growth equity team. We talk about SaaS and its important metrics, but from the point of view of the investor. Florent explains which SaaS metrics count for the most with VCs, what is a good level for each, and how these can be improved by the founders. We also discuss how the VCs envisage a winning team, how the qualitative aspects of teams are regarded, and how a founder should build his own team. Florent ends the episode with very important advice to the listeners. Listen to good advice, but you need not follow it all. Hi, so we have Florent today with us. Florent works at DTCP in the growth equity team. To start off, maybe we can get an idea about what stages you invest at Florent, what your investment thesis is, so we can understand where you come from when we talk about business models later on.
Sure. Thank you very much, Ash, for having me. Super happy to be here in your podcast and share some of my learnings with your community. I think it's really great initiative and yeah, looking forward to hear that. To answer your question, so at DTCP, we are a financially driven growth equity investor, which has offices in Europe, in US, in Israel, and in South Korea. And we typically invest into B2B SaaS companies, especially when they reach a milestone of 8 to 10 million in annual recurring revenue. And we can invest until pre-IPO. So we invest from those companies that can be at Series B stage up to companies that can be at pre-IPO stage that have already 100 million of revenue. The key characteristic as for any VC and growth equity investor into all of those companies that they are growing very fast. And at DTCP, our investment thesis is that we want to back category leaders. We are really vertical agnostics, but we want to make sure that we back those next generation champions that are shaping their category that creates products that are really sticky and will be there for a long time.
That's very interesting, Florent. Can you just give us a brief idea of what stage you come in at in the first round of investments?
Sure. So, I mean, as I said, we invest across anywhere from Series B to pre-IPO. I'd say that typically we invest whenever the company has already product market fit, right? That's for sure certain. But when there is already a sales engine that is well functioning, and for us, the proof point of a sales engine that is well functioning is typically a company that have at least 10 million in revenue. So that's basically where we invest in.
That's great. So when you start your investment thesis, the first thing you probably see is the business model the firms follow. So could you give us an idea of what kind of business models do you see in your deal flow on a typical investment day?
So we are indeed focused really on B2B SaaS. So I would say that's 90% of our deal flow. So basically, that's the only kind of business model I'm really very familiar with. But I must say already that inside B2B SaaS, there are so many different flavors, right? And so it can range from, first of all, companies that aside from their subscriptions have also professional services. Some of them have also professional licenses, perpetual licenses that they charge across in addition to their subscriptions. You also have, for instance, some transaction fees that are in addition to the subscriptions fees, and you can also have very different flavors of pricing, whether it's a fixed fee, whether it's variable fees based on number of users, based on the consumption of the firm. And finally, there's a lot of different ways to bill your customers, whether it's monthly, annually, as they consume, or upfront. And that's what makes the richness of that category of B2B SaaS. Because I think that all of those different nuances that I just mentioned have a huge impact on the business model of the company, especially on their revenue growth profile, on their cost structure, on their cash flow profile. And as an investors, we pay a very close attention to all that's all paying on. And of course, that influence our investment thesis. As I know that you have a lot of entrepreneurs in your audience, I guess that they're interested into how should I pick versus one nuance or flavor of SaaS or the other ones. And there's no universal answers because it's always a product and a function of what is the most beneficial for your customers and what is the most beneficial for you as a firm, right? And so it's very clear that when you are on the early side of your company journey and that you try to find product market fit and earn your first customers, you tend to have a model that is super beneficial to your customers and that is not always the most optimal for you as a company. And as you grow and scale, you want to continue to delight your customer, but you certainly try to pick a model that is much more also efficient for you to continue to help you grow and build a sustainable business in the long term. So that's typically the way I advise founder to think about those business models.
That's very helpful, Florent. Do you have any idea on what is a good starting point for such founders in terms of SaaS? Do you have any advice on how they should start out with the pricing in the initial days? Because I know you're not very familiar with initial stage companies, so.
Indeed, I'm not. But what I can say is, first of all, listen to your first customers. Listen to them a lot, right? And so, and look a lot at your first customer score, right? When you have somebody that is churning from your business, you have always something to learn from him, right? And or whenever you have somebody that you went through the whole process with you. It doesn't matter whether it's a small sales process or a longer one, you have always something to learn, right? And so why was the pricing not fitting to the expectations? Was it because you have a competitive offer that had a perceived similar or greater value at a more attractive pricing point? Or was it that typically your user could not afford to pay things on a monthly basis, but at a higher price, and that you should have given them a discount so that they can pay upfront? Or on the opposite side, right? Would your annual pricing be something that would definitely not suit them because they don't have the capacity to do a huge upfront investment, but on the other side, they would be quite keen to maybe trade for a couple of months or free and then starting to pay a small amount. And as the value of your solutions build and may build more value to your user as well, they would be happy to pay a greater and greater amount of their time. So only and best advice I can give is listen to your customers very carefully.
That's very good advice. In your answer, you mentioned something about churn, which brings me to our next question. What kind of metrics in terms of SaaS business models do you look at? Could you give us some priorities, the most important ones, what they should look like in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I must say that investors are looking into metrics in a way that founder should not always look into them, right? At the end of the day, what is my job? My job is to invest into a very fast-growing company and make sure that that company will be sustainably fast-growing on the long term. And so that's my job. That doesn't mean that is exactly always the right thing to do for your business. But so, having already put that caveat up front, so let me share a bit more details on how I, as an investor, look at the metrics indeed of the business. So for me, priority one, as you may have understood already, is basically the annual recurring revenue growth rate. So typically on a year-over-year basis, right? and also on a quarter over quarter basis. So, and here typically I'm looking, I mean, for a company that is below 10 million of ARR, I'm certainly looking for a growth rate of over 100% year over year, because that's what we see for top performing company at this stage. And especially, I would say still between 10 and 30 million, I would still expect something anywhere between 80% and over 100%, as I mentioned, right? So that's I would say the base point of what I would expect for a top growing company. When you reach a greater stage of maturity, let's say for instance, more than 60 million in annual recurring revenue, it is kind of expected that the growth will slow down. So I will just focus on the criteria we've seen for companies that are IPOing, right? And so if you look at 2020 and the B2B SaaS companies that have IPO'd, you have typically a growth rate at 50% plus, right? And companies that are at, in average, 100 million, 200 million, no, even of ARR, right? So that's typically the type of stage and growth profile you see for company IPOing. So that's a bit the trajectory we want our companies to be fitting in. No, I mentioned that the other very important criteria is the capital efficiency. And so in terms of capital efficiency, so first of all, defining it's typically over a given period of time, how much incremental annual recurring revenue have you added? So net new ARR divided by how much cash you have burned to generate that ARR. So, and why is that metrics important? Because we want companies that are growing fast, but that are using the cash well in order to grow fast, right? Because if they had amazing quarters, right, of growth, and basically for that they burn double the cash of compared to the annual recurring revenue, the new one they generated. That basically means that if at some point of time the investors decide to stop funding that growth because for X, Y, Z reason they think that it's no more sustainable, the company will be in trouble, right? And so that's certainly, and let me outline a bit what kind of conditions that could be. If you have a few quarters of declining growth, which can very well happen because you can have everything can happen into a journey of a startup, right? And would be very hard for that company to sustain and raise fund again, right? Whereas for a company that is on the other side, burning roughly as much money as they are adding new ARR per year, per quarter, per whatever metrics you want to look at. We look at it on an annual basis, typically. That's a company that we will be much more easy to finance. First of all, because they can be a bit more aggressive on the cash burn if they have a couple of quarters where they are growing less fast, right? So typically the trajectory we will see, oh, the company is having 2 quarters where they are growing less fast, but they can basically burn a bit more because they are already so much capital efficient that burning a bit more is not endangering the business. And so hopefully by burning a bit more, they will come back to their normal state in terms of growth. And be able to continue to raise fund with other investors. So we really value a lot at DTCP capital efficiency. So those are the two most important metrics. What I would qualify as tier two in terms of importance for metrics is basically sales and marketing efficiency. So which we measure by magic numbers. It's something that your reader can Google and can find a very easy definition for it, but it's kind of an analogous concept as the capital efficiency, but on a sales and marketing efficiency standpoint, right? And then a couple of customers metric. What is the ACV, average contract value, on an annual basis that your customer are paying to you, in relations to how much time do you take to close those leads? And also, are your customer growing? Because something that is amazing with SaaS is that once you sign the customer, if you have implemented a proper land and expand strategy in your pricing, you can grow within that customers. And so you have the potential to have what we call net retention, meaning that when you look at your customer basis on an aggregated basis, you have some of them that will grow a lot. For instance, at 150% of their annual of their initial contract value after 1 year, and some others that will have maybe churned a bit, but on an aggregated basis, what we are looking at is typically that for a company targeting enterprise customers, that at 12 months, that net retention that I describe, so the expansion minus the churn and the downgrade is around 120%. And above, yeah, of course, the more the greater. And then you have a couple of metrics that I would qualify as tier three, even though they're still important, but it's anything related to gross margin, right? A good SaaS company should have over 80% gross margin because the only costs are supposed to be hosting and maybe a little bit of implementation of the salary of the guys that are doing implementation in a B2B context. What else do we have in terms of tier three metrics? So we are looking, of course, at anything related to evolution of customer count. That's, of course, very important because you not only want to grow within a customer, but you want to make sure that you're adding new customer and new revenue. We are looking at net new ARR, but as I mentioned, it's already more or less captured in our analysis of the ARR growth rate. We are looking into LTV and CAC, but that's also something captured within our magic numbers. So yeah, I must say that that's really the numbers we are looking at and the way we think about it on a high level.
Coming back to ACV, which we talked about, there are certain products which just naturally have a smaller ACV, whereas some bigger solutions will attract higher ACV. So how do you look at these two differences in terms of ACV?
First of all, you can build a great business with any kind of ACV, right? And I'll pick two examples in our portfolio. So Pipedrive is a company that is having roughly a 1K ACV, right? So really on the small side of the SMB, right? Most of the time, 2 to 3 person paying for their CRM, right? And on the other side, we have companies such as Signavio that are chasing whales account and that have ACV of several hundred K and even for some of their flagship customer of several million per year. So you can build a great business with all kind of ACV, but your ACV should always be very closely linked to your sales, to your go-to-market approach and your the way you structure your sales, right? At Pipedrive, 1K ACV, it's impossible to build a big and sustainable outbound sales team. Pipedrive has been an amazing machine to do inbound marketing and acquire customers through that channel. Some customers are almost downloading and converting on a self-service basis, right? And so we've never seen a company getting so viral and so efficient at acquiring customers that way. But there's certainly no human in the loop or very few human in the loop in the term of really converting customer within that sales process. On the other side, in Signavio, you have a 6-month sales cycle with a team of 4 to 5 sales working on the same customers in order to close it up. And we monitor very closely the productivity of each of those account executives on a regular basis. And of course, so the larger you're trying to run the contract, the longer will be your sales cycle. And the larger will need to be your sales team to a certain extent. So, long story short, ACV has implications in terms of go-to-market strategy and organization, meaning on how you structure your sales team. So, Let's always make sure for the entrepreneur in your podcast that you know your customer, you know the customer you're addressing, you know the best way to convert them, and you focus really on that mission of that small segment of the market that you know very well and for which you have really constructed a go-to-market approach that makes sense, is efficient. And is adapted to your segment.
That's a very interesting point you brought out in terms of the go-to-market strategy. And to be honest, I think that deserves a separate podcast of its own. So maybe we can plan that for some time in the future. But in the meantime, you did mention a lot about how sales teams play into the equations, how the technical team play into the metrics. So could you give us an idea about how the founders or the teams fit into your overall investment analysis process?
Sure. And yeah, I want to also put a disclaimer up front. I'm a growth equity investor, right? And so way I look at the team is certainly very different to the one of an early stage VC in that regard. When we invest in a company, the company has already a history with this team. So we invest typically at companies that have over 100 FTEs. I think that we've never invested in a company that is smaller than that. So that gives already an idea on what we are looking at. When it comes to the founders, it happens in a lot of our companies that the founder and not anymore the one in charge of running everything, or at least that they can be very much still in the company, but sometimes also, and they can be also in the driver's seat, but sometimes also they have already hired some executive to help them on different topic, right? Could be on sales and marketing, could be on engineering, because you need a very different type of skill sets to be able to grow an early stage company and a late stage company. And so when we think about team, we think about what does that company needs to be able to grow from being a great growing company that have been grown from 1 to 10 million of ARR to a company that will become a category leader to grow from 10 to 50. And there is no universal magic wand on that one, but it's very important, especially for B2B SaaS company, to scale the go-to-market. And the type of people you need to scale the go-to-market between 10 and 50 are typically people that have experience in structuring sales team, meaning that the VP sales, SVP sales, chief sales officer, chief revenue officer, whatever you want to call him, is no more the guy that is doing actually the sales. He's the guy that is not even doing the key account management. He's the guy that is really in charge of managing tens and dozens of account executive or sales development representatives that will nurture leads to that. He's the one that will think about how to address go to market differently in France versus in UK versus in US versus in another country. Is the one also that will be instrumental in hiring country managers for those new countries that you want to develop. And so that's a bit the quality that we see. Someone that is able to build a very robust sales engine that is able to build on a quarterly basis, and not so much a deal closer as you would like to see perhaps for a company between 10 million of ARR. Same thing on the engineering side, right? At the beginning, you need to find the right product interface, the right features and functionality to delight your early user, and you're really in a iterative building mode a lot, right? And so you're always trying to be a bit reactive, especially if you have an agile type of development mentality. When you reach that growth stage, your core product is already very mature, right? And so it's more about thinking, how should your roadmap evolve? in evolutions of your customer needs. What kind of adjacent areas do you want to go at? And how do you industrialize the development of the features to make sure that it's always on time, quarterly, and that you don't miss the train anymore? So yeah, we really, in addition to the role of CTO, really need to have people that are really purely on engineering and processing the engineering side. Type of roles that are really also critical to hire at the stage where we are, if they are not existing in the company yet, are operations and people. So to make sure that as the company grow, it maintains its culture and is able to continue to attract at a very fast pace a high number of very talented individuals. And on the operation side, it's typically that make sure that the company starts setting up the right processes that will allow us to close deals, to make sure that there is good communications between teams and that no balls has been dropped and everything is done. So very different type of roles that what you need for an early stage company. Sometimes you have founders that are great in involving in those roles. Sometimes you need to have a complement, and at the end of the day, a founder cannot do anything by itself. So because it has so many hours in a day, so it needs help to with some specialist so that it can focus on what is the best at. And that's very different from one founder to another. Some founders are great visionaries that thinks about the strategy of the team. Some founders are great at executions and are the leader putting his hand in the engine and showing by example. So it is just about finding the right complement for them so that the things they are less good at can be easily done by somebody else.
That's very interesting, Florent. It does signal that founders need to do some introspecting at your stage to figure out where the team needs to be complemented. So that was very good advice. Do you have any other advice for our founders or entrepreneurs of future in terms of improving these metrics that we discussed or improving their team that you would like them to know about that they might be missing at this stage?
Always listen to advice, but I think that a quality of a great, there's no shortcoming of advice, right? I mean, the advice are in great abundance in current world. So the job of a great founder is to be able to be open to have all of those inputs that he can find in the ecosystem and being able to make the right synthesis and take the right decision out of it. Because even if what I've said, I'm sure I said a lot of things stupid across the interviews, and that someone has a more informed opinion than me on this topic. So, yeah, at the end of the day, the job of a founder is to use all of the input here at his disposal, make the right selections and the right synthesis so that his company can grow.
Thank you so much, Florent. We really appreciate your time and hope to see you on the podcast again soon.
Sure, I mean, it was a blast. Thanks so much for having me again. And yeah, I wish very well to your community.